everyone, and thank you for joining me for this podcast. Now, I'm sure lots of you will have some background knowledge in this area. Hormones is a subject matter that I teach at GCSE. I do cover it at A-level as well, but I've actually recorded a number of podcasts on this channel about hormones and their effects on the body, and just how we can really manipulate hormone levels in terms of blood glucose control, IVF and fertility. I talk about hormones in relation to aggression, in relation to depression. There's a whole range of podcasts that hormones are part and parcel of. And in this one, in this podcast, what I'd like to do is focus on their role in emotion and behaviour. There'll be a number of different hormones and endocrine glands that I refer to, but I'm going to look at a few specific ones in this session, and I'll also draw on some research evidence to support that knowledge ultimately. I think it's important before we begin, though, to look at hormones, what they actually are, what really is their function. And we know that the human body comprises of a large number of physiological systems that we need to maintain healthy functioning. So if we think, for example, we've got the circulatory system, that's the heart, the blood vessels, we've got the nervous system of the brain and the spinal cord and the peripheral nerves. But we have the endocrine system, and that is comprised of the endocrine glands, and it's those that make and secrete the hormones. Now, the endocrine system controls many of the body's functions, including the sleep-wake cycle, the flight and fight response, puberty, menstruation, reproduction. There's a whole range of things that they're responsible for, ultimately. Now, each different endocrine gland makes and secretes a very specific hormone. And those hormones act like chemical messengers. They travel around the body, in the bloodstream, to very specific areas where they will bring about a very specific effect. So clearly the word is specific there. Now, if we think about a couple of these endocrine glands, just to give you a bit of an overview, we've got the pineal that releases melatonin. That's involved in regulation of the sleep-wake cycle. The pituitary, which many of you may be aware, releases oxytocin. That promotes pro-social behaviour and attachment. We've got the thyroid gland releasing thyroxine that controls appetite and metabolism. And I have recorded a whole separate podcast just about the thyroid gland. It's fascinating. It's a really misunderstood, I feel, part of the body. So I definitely recommend listening to that one. We've got the adrenal glands releasing adrenaline that is involved in the fight and flight response. But you also might be aware of the stress response hormone cortisol. That comes from the adrenal gland too. We've got the pancreas releasing insulin and glucagon, all involved in regulation of blood sugar. The ovaries, estrogen and progesterone. Estrogen involved in the development and regulation of the female reproductive system. And progesterone regulating menstruation and pregnancy. And the testes releasing testosterone. And they're involved, or that's involved rather, in the development and regulation of the male reproduction system. And as I alluded to before, there's a role in aggression there. So let's just pick up on a few specific hormones and talk about their role in emotion and behaviour. Let's start with adrenaline. You might have heard the term adrenaline junkie. Thrill seeker, someone who loves adventure, extreme sports, or riding the highest, fastest roller coaster. In simple terms, adrenaline junkie describes someone who appears to be addicted to the feeling they get when they experience this rush of adrenaline. Adrenaline is known as the fight or flight hormone because its function is to prepare the body to deal with a threat, either by attacking or by running away from danger. The hormone is secreted by the adrenal medulla, the middle section of the adrenal glands, which are located above the kidneys. So when the body is under threat, or let's say perceived threat, it needs to act quickly. The function of adrenaline, therefore, is to increase circulatory and respiratory activity, which increases the flow of blood and oxygen, crucially, to the brain and organs. The effects of this are experienced as a rapid heartbeat, quickened breathing, sweating, and even redness. You might sense these physiological effects when you're excited or afraid, because the body needs to take action to deal with that impending danger, if you like. It's less important to use energy for other functions, things like digestion. Another effect of adrenaline, therefore, is to slow down the function of the digestive system in order to preserve energy for where it is required. Adrenaline creates a state of physical arousal and psychological alertness, feelings that accompany states of fear, of threat, of euphoria, and sexual excitement. Schachter and Singer in 1962 conducted an investigation into the emotional effect of adrenaline, and the aim was to test the two-factor theory of emotion. A participant sample of, I think it was around 184, I believe, male college students was divided into four groups, and they were told that they would receive an injection of suproxin to test its effect on vision. However, the participants were deceived. Three groups were given an injection of adrenaline, while the control group was given a placebo. The men were either told the true effects of adrenaline or false information. The control group were given no information at all. The study had two conditions. In condition one, participants were encouraged to play games as they waited for the study to commence. Researchers called this euphoria condition. In condition two, participants observed a confederate completing a questionnaire and growing increasingly angry. That was the anger condition. Participants were observed for changes in emotion during those two conditions and were then asked to fill out a questionnaire to ultimately report their emotional state. When I use the term confederate, just to clarify what I mean by that, a confederate is a fake participant who knows the true nature of the study and whose behavior influences the participant sample. Okay, that might be a term that maybe some of you might not be familiar with, but that's what we're talking about when we talk about a confederate, a fake participant who actually knows what's going on in that particular study. Now, the researchers found that participants who were accurately informed about the effects of adrenaline displayed minimal changes in emotion, while those who had been misinformed displayed much higher changes in emotion. Self-report questionnaires confirmed those observations. Participants who received a placebo experienced no state of arousal. That study supported the two-factor theory of emotion. And it was concluded that individuals use a combination of psychological cues and cognitive labelling to construct their, I guess you could say, subjective experience of emotion. Another fascinating hormone is oxytocin. If adrenaline is known as the fight or flight hormone, then oxytocin is sometimes referred to as the tend and befriend, or the cuddle hormone. It's secreted by the posterior lobe of the pituitary gland, which is located at the base of the brain. Oxytocin is released when people bond and they form attachments, either physically, as in sort of hugging, or psychologically, when they fall in love. That release of oxytocin is not limited to romantic love. It's also secreted when a mother cuddles her baby, or when a boy strokes his dog, for example. Oxytocin can also have an opposite effect. Its release can cause suspicion of people who are unknown to us, and it makes us less accepting of strangers. Now, that suggests that the physiological effects of oxytocin are influenced by environmental cues. Oxytocin has a particularly important function in female reproduction. It's the hormone that stimulates contractions when the baby is due to be born, and which helps shrink the uterus after delivery. Oxytocin production is stimulated by the baby's suckling action, which in turn stimulates the production of mother's milk for breastfeeding. It's also believed to play an important role in mother-baby attachment. Oxytocin has a similar effect on a father's capacity to bond with his infant, as research has demonstrated. Studies have illustrated the influence of oxytocin by using nasal sprays to simulate its effect. So new fathers who were given oxytocin via a nasal spray back in a 2012 study were observed to demonstrate more nurturing behaviour towards their babies than fathers who were not exposed to oxytocin. Another study found that men in relationships were less likely to approach an attractive woman if they were given oxytocin than men who were not exposed to the hormone. The hormone did not affect single men who were not in a relationship though. That suggests that oxytocin may promote fidelity in men who are attached and act as a deterrent against infidelity. In a 2010 study, men were given a dose of oxytocin and asked to write about their mothers. Those with secure relationships described their mothers as more caring, while those with troubled relationships described them as less caring. Now that suggests that oxytocin may help to strengthen previous associations, whether positive or negative. And again, from a couple of years ago, 2011 study found that Dutch students, rather, given oxytocin via nasal spray, were more positive about fictional Dutch characters, but were more negative about characters with Arab or German names. Now, that supported the notion that social bonding actually affects, or the social bonding rather effects of oxytocin, are influenced by social cues. Let's talk about the sex hormones. Let's start with estrogen. Estrogen is the female sex hormone secreted by the ovaries in females. Its functions include the development of the primary and the secondary female sexual characteristics. So during puberty, estrogen is responsible for breast development, for fat distribution and widening of the hips, synonymous with that female hourglass silhouette, if you like. Estrogen is also responsible for the development of the vagina and the uterus and the function of the ovaries. Although primarily considered a female hormone, it is secreted in small amounts in males. Now, in both genders, estrogen is responsible for sex drive or libido. Estrogen has been found to increase the effects of oxytocin, which supports the function of parental bonding and attachment. Studies have found that men who are fathers had higher levels of estrogen and lower levels of cortisol and testosterone than non-fathers. Again, research supports the role of estrogen in physical, psychological, and emotional behaviour. Estrogen levels rise and fall during a woman's menstrual cycle. They're the lowest just before and during menstruation, and peak midway through the cycle, when the woman is most fertile. Lower levels of estrogen at certain times of the month have been associated with fluctuations in mood and premenstrual tension, or PMT. There's also a link between estrogen levels and eating. Researchers found that lower levels of estrogen are associated with binge eating, particularly in women with eating disorders. Further research suggests an interaction between both estrogen and progesterone and emotional eating at certain times during the menstrual cycle, and it's argued that higher levels of those hormones lead to an increased emotional eating phase. Estrogen replacement therapy has been effective in suppressing binge eating in female mice. Hormone replacement therapy, or HRT as it's known, using estrogen may therefore be a possible treatment for binge eating behaviour in women. Further animal studies have found estrogen replacement therapy to be an effective treatment for obsessive compulsive behaviours in mice. Now that suggests that low estrogen levels may be linked to obsessions and compulsions, and that estrogen replacement therapy could be an effective treatment for OCD. And again, I've recorded a separate podcast on the channel all about OCD, if you are interested. And low or fluctuating levels of estrogen occur in the period before and after menopause. And estrogen levels actually drop after giving birth or postpartum. That has a significant effect on mood and can result in mood disorders such as depression, specifically postnatal depression and postmenopausal depression. Testosterone is the male sex hormone, and it's secreted by the testes in males. Its functions include the development of primary and secondary sexual characteristics in males. And during puberty, testosterone influences physiological changes such as deepening of the voice, the growth of facial hair, increased body mass, and growth of the penis and the testicles. Throughout the lifespan, testosterone is responsible for maintaining sex drive, and it actually influences the associated male traits such as aggression. Testosterone is also secreted in small amounts from the ovaries in females and can influence sex drive and aggression in both of those genders. Testosterone also has a role in stimulating the production of red blood cells and in the manufacture of protein in the muscles, in the liver and the kidneys. Now that's a role that I don't think many people necessarily would associate with testosterone. Researchers, as you can imagine, have been hugely interested in the relationship between testosterone, sex and aggression. One study examined the records of I think it was just shy of 700 male prison inmates, and found that men who had committed sexual or violent crimes had significantly higher levels of testosterone than those who had committed non-violent and or non-sexual crimes. This and previous studies into the relationship between testosterone, sex and aggression are limited by small sample sizes, as well as social and cultural bias, inevitably. Researchers Dabbs and Morris, back in 1990, investigated the relationship between testosterone, sex and aggression using a much larger sample of just shy of 4,500 American Army personnel. The men were enlisted into the Army in 1985, I believe it was, from a range of social, cultural, educational and occupational backgrounds. Participants' testosterone levels were measured, and then they were first enlisted and again at discharge. Researchers also gathered information about sexual behaviour, aggression and criminal behaviour. It was found that men with high testosterone levels were significantly more likely to have been involved in childhood delinquency, adult crime, drug use and alcohol use. They were also found to have had more sexual partners than men with lower levels of testosterone. A further finding related to socioeconomic status. Men with high levels of education and income were less likely to display antisocial behaviour than men with low income and less education. They were also found to have lower levels of testosterone. It was therefore concluded that socioeconomic status moderates the effects of testosterone. And that study that I've just spoke about demonstrates that merely stating a cause and effect relationship between testosterone and aggression is way too simplistic. It's been found to affect aggressive and sexual behaviour, but socio-cultural factors also affect testosterone levels. I think to sum up, hormones are chemical messengers that we can clearly see have very specific physiological effects in the body. Research suggests that hormones have considerable influence on behaviour and emotion in both human and non-human animals. It supports the notion that behaviour and emotion have physiological origins. It is not appropriate, however, to say that hormones cause behaviour, but that hormones influence behaviour. Research highlights the interaction between physiological factors and environmental stimuli, supporting ultimately a correlational effect. As always, if you have any questions about anything that I've mentioned in this podcast, do get in touch at kytosbiology@gmail.com. I'd like to say a big thank you to everyone for listening. I'd like to thank our sponsors as well, Curriculum Press, for providing content for me to use for this particular podcast. So, thanks again. Until next time.